Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and social critic. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. We invite your calls and story to 781-3875. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How about yourself?
I'm glad you're doing excellent.
Good.
That's such a great thing to be able to say.
Yeah.
And you think about the course of your life, how many times during the week do you feel excellent?
Mine personally?
Yeah.
I think most more often than not.
That's really good. They say that if you can be feeling pretty darn good 70% of the time, you are having a stellar life experience.
Well, that sounds like me then.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us, you know, believe that we need to be feeling stellar 100% of the time. And that goal unto itself causes a lot of anxiety and depression. So ironic that we have this, you know, misconception that we're supposed to be feeling fabulous 100% of the time. And if we don't, we get depressed. So imagine if we just set our bar at a more normalized state of, you know, hoping for 60 to 70% of the time feeling good, how much different our life would be. Hmm. I don't know. So what else is going on in your life?
We got a new bed, which makes me sleep amazingly well.
For the 3 hours you get to sleep?
And then we have a two-month-old baby that takes me away from that new bed.
Oh, see, maybe you should be sleeping on the floor.
Yeah.
So when he cries, it's like, hey, might as well get up.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's been a good experience.
Well, it goes probably faster than you thought it would.
Definitely.
Well, it's been an interesting week because I listened back to last week's show and there was a lot of follow-up to our conversation about ADHD. And of course, it's a much larger topic than probably just an hour can hold. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of calls, which we really appreciate. And we always welcome your calls at 781-3875. So this week, I kind of wanted to follow up with some of the ADHD conversation. And not that we can wrap it up and tie a bow on it, but follow up with a couple issues that did come up. And also to, as always, remind our listeners that this hour is for you. What is it you've always wanted to ask a therapist but didn't have the opportunity and didn't want to spend the money to sit for 50 minutes? Mm-hmm. So you hear you have a therapist right on the other end of the line. You can call in and ask questions, talk about your life, your relationships, things that you struggle with, things that are going well. I really, you know, believe that we should all have the access that we need to people who might have information that helps us. And that's something I always struggled with as a therapist, is that only people that could afford to get to my office were able to find out the things that I had been trained in all these years. And it feels like if I know some tricks, everyone who's struggling or living a life and trying to do their best should get to know those tricks. So that's what we're here doing once a week. Brian and I are opening up the phones and trying to create a community of supportive, caring people who are kind of looking out for each other and sharing stories. Because when we talk about the things we struggle with, more often than not, there are many people that struggle with the same issues, and they're benefiting from the conversation you're willing to bring up on the air. Because I realize that not everyone feels comfortable making that phone call. It can be overwhelming. So for those of you who are, you know, a little nervous to make the call the first time, I welcome you to join us on our Facebook page. You can go to The Reluctant Therapist on Facebook, and I post previous shows and people make comments. It's a great way to get a hold of us. Or you can send an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Or you can call in and chat with Brian and ask your question off the air, and he can read it to me. We can go from there. So you don't necessarily have to find the courage to hear your voice coming back over the radio, which, as Brian and I both know, is a horrifying experience.
Yes, it definitely can be.
I never get used to it. I always think, is that my mom talking?
Yeah, I go through similar experiences.
Do you hear my mom too in your voice?
No, my mom.
Oh, okay, sorry. So we welcome you to join the conversation, 781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. So last week we talked about ADHD and how there finally, after years of seeing an escalation in the diagnosis of ADHD in children and in adults, and the incredible amount of prescriptions that are being written to treat ADHD, we're finally having experts who are coming out and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe this is not going the right direction. Maybe there is an overdiagnosis that's happening. There's too many children that are being medicated. Maybe we need to rethink this. So hallelujah, because it's a topic that's been near and dear to my heart. But the big question now is, what do we do with these families and kids that are struggling, or these adults that are struggling with attention issues? What are some of the other causes for the ADHD symptomology, right? And how do we address those? And so it's interesting that this Sunday, of course, there was yet another article in the New York Times, and I think this is probably the fourth or fifth article over the course of the last month or so that's been directed towards ADHD or meds that are prescribed for ADHD. And this weekend's conversation was from a Dr. Thakkar. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, but he's from the NYU School of Medicine. And his premise or idea is that ADHD in many cases could actually be sleep deprivation. So that's near and dear to your heart right now.
Yeah.
And that we notice, you know, distinct changes in our behavior when we're sleep deprived. And you might feel lethargy, inability to focus, being more cranky, right? Sometimes we're more hungry when we're sleep deprived. But in children, most often in children, when they are sleep deprived, their behavior becomes more hyperactive. You know, instead of getting more tired and lethargic during the day, they actually get what we consider the dreaded second wind. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever had a child that stayed up past their bedtime, instead of getting more tired, they actually find the second wind and they get more hyper and more agitated. And it's even more difficult to get them to settle down and go to sleep, which is why when I work with parents, I always recommend that you put your children down an hour before you think they're tired, because children actually get tired earlier than we notice them yawning, if that makes sense. You know, most kids would do well between the ages of, you know, 2 and 10, going to bed between 7 and 7:30 and getting 12 hours sleep. That would be ideal. That means that families actually have to change their whole lifestyle so that they can get their kids to bed at the same time every night. But if you can do it for 2 weeks or so, your kids will adapt to that time change and they'll actually sleep better. But the problem a lot of parents get into is they wait till 8 or 9 o'clock to get their kids ready for bed. And by that time, they've already passed their tired point and they're getting to that hyper second wind point. And it becomes a real challenge to get them to go down. So that's just a little aside on sleep behavior for parents. But what they found is that since 1960, the increase in sleep deprivation in all categories, children and adults, has risen. In 1960, 2% of the adult population reported getting less than 8 hours sleep a night, which is, you know, 8 to 9 is our normal. So 2% reported getting, I think, 7 hours or less a night. By 2011, 35% of the adult population reported getting less than 7 hours sleep. So you can imagine that impact on your system if you're continuously in this state of sleep deprivation. Now put it on our children's system where they're trying to grow. They are growing and developing so quickly, as you're seeing with your baby. Every day you say he looks bigger.
Right.
So this is continuous throughout childhood during the evening hours, the nighttime hours when they're sleeping and needing those delta hours of sleep when all the growth happens and our hormones regenerate themselves and our nervous system resets for the next day. If we don't get enough sleep, our bodies can't regenerate, can't recharge. And so then we just continually build on a system that's getting more and more broken down. And then we see these behaviors. So that's on my mind. Is enough sleep. It makes me a little tired talking about it.
Me too.
But that's one of the pieces that we need to consider. And then the other thing that I've been thinking about is a couple of the phone calls that we got last week. And one was from Christy. Remember what Christy called?
Mm-hmm.
And she's a stay-at-home mom and has the 3 kids, has an 8-week-old. Mm-hmm. Go, Christy. I hope you're getting some sleep. I think older child than her middle child she was concerned about because he seems to be displaying some behaviors that would be considered ADHD type of symptoms. And she said, how do I deal with this? And there were many reasons that concerned her. One is that it started to become difficult for her to take him places, or to, you know, she felt embarrassed to go to family because they were judgmental. She felt like she wasn't really maybe getting enough support from her husband, who was tired at the end of the day. And my heart broke for her, because here's the case of a family in that middle bracket, right? That middle income level, is trying to do the right things. The dad's working, mom's at home with the kids, being the emotion worker. They have 3 children, you know, they're kind of bouncing along, making it all happen, but they're struggling. they need some help. They need some extra hands. And where does that come from? We have programs for those that are financially really struggling, and they can get scholarship money for different programs and camps and activities. So we do pretty well with those in severe need. And those who have enough financial resources, clearly they can find extra help. They can hire a nanny or, you know, someone to come in during the day to help out, or they can get into programs, after school sports for their kids. But what about that middle level that doesn't have that extra income, that extra $50, $60 to get involved in a program that would help her son, you know, blow off some of the steam? Mm-hmm. Because what we're finding with ADHD symptomology, and I keep saying symptomology because I really want to address the symptoms of it. You know, if we can find out why kids are feeling hyper and can't focus, is it because of sleep? Is it because of diet? And is it because of a lack of time outside? Because things have changed since you and I were young with the amount of time kids get to be outside. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think? You're welcome to join the conversation at 805-781-3875. That's a conversation with a reluctant therapist, Elizabeth Barrett and Brian. And you had talked about spending time, you know, at after school programs as a kid.
That's right. Both my parents were working full time, and I had to be in daycare centers, and then eventually went to Sun and Fun, which got to stay on campus after school, and it was a good program. We got, you know, stayed social, stayed active, outdoors playing, doing arts and crafts, but I personally just hated being on campus more than I had to be.
But the being outside part was preferable to being home, you know, just watching TV.
Right. Well, I liked both, and I didn't mind doing either, but I think I benefited definitely more from being forced to be in the Sun and Fun program.
Right, yeah. Running until you fall asleep, which
right.
is when parents say, you know, what are some of the tricks to parenting, those the tips that make it a little easier? And my favorite, you know, a couple. One is to get your kids to bed as early as possible. One, because it gives you some time alone in the evening to be with your husband or wife and to just hang out and chat, and that's invaluable to your life. Mm-hmm. So put your kids down earlier than you think they need to go, because they'll appreciate it in the long run. They'll get to sleep. And my second tip is to run them like puppies until they're asleep at night. You know, keep them busy. And especially the way things have changed in schools, they're getting very little outside movement. You know, PE's been cut back and recess has been cut back. And I know in some schools, they don't even let the kids run because they're afraid they're going to fall down and get
wow.
hurt. Oh, it's just so the amount of time, and especially our little boys get to just run and run and run and run and run and swing sticks and pretend that they're, you know, pirates and climb trees. And, you know, those really simple, basic things about life that our kids aren't getting as much time to do as they used to are really invaluable. And I wonder how we, you know, it's not like we can turn back time, clearly, mm-hmm. But how do we bring some of those things that worked so well when we were younger back into the social conversation? Because I think there's been this interesting parallel between the rise of huge bureaucratic social welfare programs, you know, that kind of became the parent of all of those people who were in need, either socially, financially, emotionally, resources for economic programs and educational programs. So we have this huge bureaucracy of social welfare programs that meets the needs of a certain segment of our population. But as I mentioned before, there's another segment of our population that absolutely does not get served. And I think what happened is that when I was young, and I think for somewhat when you were young, but maybe not as much, my mom's generation relied on other moms. And there was a very strong network of mom-to-mom support or neighborhood support, community support. You know, we all knew our neighbors. And if someone acted out in the front yard, the neighbor would call my mom and say, hey, here's what your kids are doing. So there was much more person-to-person support that was happening. And we've kind of lost that. We've kind of accepted this sense of isolation and alienation in our lives as being the norm. But it really wasn't the norm as, you know, early as 30 years ago. We had much more community support and we had much more person-to-person contact. But I think we've moved so far away from that day-to-day support that we don't even know how to get it back. And so I'm wondering what we can do as a community to reach out to someone across the street, because we do great with our charitable organizations in this community. I mean, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara counties, Monterey counties really have incredible programs for support for different, for the arts, for kids, for animals. We do great work. But what about the person to person? You know, someone who needs a half hour to take their kids to the park, or someone who needs an extra set of hands on the weekend. Where can we find that? That's in my mind today. You're welcome to call in 781-3875. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we'll be back to take your calls.
That number to call again is 781-3875. That's area code 805-781-3875. This is The Reluctant Therapist. Coming up at 3 o'clock on the next Fresh Air, we talk about Syria and the tough choices facing America with C.J. Chivers of the New York Times, who has been in Syria covering the Civil War. Chivers also contributes to the paper's At War blog, is a former Marine, and the author of The Gun, A History of the AK-47. Join us at 3 o'clock for Fresh Air here on KCBX. The number to call again is 781-3875.
And if you can't get through right away, please be patient, because the phones are lighting up and Brian is on his own in there answering calls. So he's doing both duties, chatting with me and answering your call. Please be patient. We are talking a little bit of a follow-up from last week about ADHD symptomology, but also I'm wondering about person-to-person charities and how we can find help for those that are kind of just getting by but still struggling and don't really have access to resources that might make their life a little easier. I remember when I was a young stay-at-home mom and my husband traveled all the time. He was back east. My family lived up in the Bay Area, and so I was here alone a lot. And I remember being so lonely and feeling sorry for myself. And I had a newborn and a young child at home and really could have used, you know, some company, maybe someone to chat with for a half hour or someone to give me a break on the weekends or, you know, just a little bit of help. Not a lot. I just needed a little to get by, and it would have made such a difference. And I'm thinking that for a lot of us, our mental health would really be improved by having, you know, just person-to-person contact every now and then. Doesn't have to be a lot, but just enough to make us feel like we're not so alone on this journey, because it is a journey. And I think that the isolation we experience in our culture has caused a lot of us to feel embarrassed and ashamed when we struggle. There's the appearance that everybody else is doing okay and we're not. And once we start feeling like everyone else is doing okay and we're not, then we start to isolate ourselves more and start to feel more frustrated. And so it's time to reach out. And hopefully this program is one of the ways we can do it. Hi, Lorraine. You're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have a six-year-old son who we didn't know if he's just not focusing or if he has good days or bad days. It seems like sometimes he can count out change completely, and then other times you know, place a nickel in front of him and he can't recognize it as being a nickel. Mm-hmm. Is that, that's my first question is, when it comes to focusing in ADD, listening to that, would you say he is? And then the other part of the question I have is, what do you think of the vaccination program on young people? Do you think it's necessary, and if it contributes at all to what you're talking about today?
Yeah, you know, Lorraine, thank you for calling in and sharing that, because I think your story is a story a lot of moms experience. Because developmentally at 6 years old, you know, your son is still kind of moving between being a child and kind of developing these more cognitive thinking skills. So I think there is a learning curve on that. But I also think it's something that an education specialist, you know, would be much more able to. It sounds like more of a learning issue and not a focus issue, if that makes sense. But I think an educator would be better suited for that conversation. I think if it's a matter of focusing, I always ask people, what are the exceptions? You know, are there times that he focuses really well and is, you know, right on? Can you think of exceptions to the times where he's not focused?
It seems like if he wants to do something, he's 1,000% focusing on it. But for the most part, my husband says that he's lazy. You know, or he's an underachiever.
Well, and you know, I think we put a lot of pressure on our children at very young ages because we, as parents, are made to feel like we should be buying, you know, little Einstein programs and teaching them to sign language when they're babies. And I mean, we put a lot of pressure on children to be geniuses at very young ages. And I guess I would caution parents to say, you know, if there are things that he does well and he's excited about, focus on those things that he does well, because that will build his confidence and his interest in other areas. Because when he feels successful in one area, he'll be more curious about learning other things. But I think when we, you know, ignore the things our children do well and keep trying to push them down a path that they're struggling, it just sets them up to feel less interested, more like a failure, and therefore might withdraw. And that would be my concern.
Okay.
Does that help?
That does. Thank you. What would you say about the second part as far as vaccination?
Oh, and you know, in that one, I also don't feel qualified because I'm not a medical doctor. You know, I've just read probably the same things you've read, and all I can say is to please make yourself an informed consumer and talk to multiple medical professionals, because I know that there's a wide variety of feelings on that issue right now, but it's definitely not my area of expertise.
Okay.
Thank you, Lorraine. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Hi, Madge. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi there. I just as well moved into a new neighborhood after living my entire life in my hometown, and I have absolutely no idea how to get to know people. I'm feeling very isolated. I was just out this morning doing some yard work, and I'm thinking, where are all the kids?
Yeah.
Where are all those kids that used to come around, and like we did when we were kids, and say, hey, you know, 20 cents an hour? Okay, I'm old. I'll weed your front lawn. I mean, it's like there's a lot of things I can't do now that I'm getting older. And I would love to hire somebody. I can't afford a gardener, of course, but a kid, you know, why don't you take your kids around and knock on doors and say, hey, you know, this is my kid. I'm the mom. We live here. And get to know your neighbors and just help out a little. It doesn't have to be charity. Your
no.
neighbors are just waiting to meet you and to, you know, get your kids to wash their car.
Well, and I love that, because that's how we made our spending money when we were kids, was going
exactly.
around, right? And so I have a couple suggestions. One, my husband has great luck posting jobs on the Cal Poly student board. We've had amazing college students who come and help on the weekends with yard work. That's one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're
very
fabulous,
nice.
Fabulous students. But also on the high schools, if you contact the high school, I bet they have some sort of ROP or job training that might put the word out. And then the third one is going to be a little of a challenge, Madge. And I wonder if you made up a flyer that said, new to the neighborhood, looking for some help, you know, a few little jobs, and listed them and took them around to a couple of your neighbors, kind of reverse job shopping, if you'd have any luck.
Now, why didn't I think of that?
Well, it just came
to me
because
great idea.
I would love to know if you had success with it. And if you do it, please call me back, because if it works, we might be onto something. Because that's,
you know,
the whole
thing. I'm going to do that.
I hope you do. Because
I'm always complaining that nobody wants to do the hard work anymore, so I'm going to do the hard work.
I would love it. And I want you to call me, because if it works, then that's exactly what I'm talking about today, is how do we take need and knowledge and put them together?
Exactly. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity.
I'm so glad you called
and
in.
The ideas.
And I hope you enjoy your new place.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
And you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about life and relationships and community, and how do we help each other out? How do we put together need and knowledge? And I can be a resource of that knowledge in some ways, and in ways that I can't be, I'll try to send you out for other answers. But if you had an opportunity to talk to a therapist or a counselor, what would you ask them? Give us a call at 805-781-3875. Hey, Kyle, you're on the air with a Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was just listening to the conversation, and I was listening to you talk about community and, you know, the way that people interact with each other, and also talking a lot about the pressure that gets put on kids earlier and earlier ages.
Absolutely.
And I'm a kid myself. Well, actually, recently I just turned not a kid, but I'm a high school senior, and I'm faced with the very tough decision of where I want to go to college next year. The deadline to decide is actually tomorrow, and I'm really torn between the more traditional experience, the more traditional community that a university like Princeton University would offer me, and the sort of smaller intimacy, getting to know people on a very deep level that small college in the desert with about 26 people called Deep Springs would offer me. I just want to know if you have any thoughts about that.
I thank you for calling in and letting me be part of this conversation with you because, one, it's an extremely exciting thing to be faced with. But I also hear more and more from my students, you know, because I teach at Cal Poly, about the pressure they felt choosing colleges and the process of trying to decide where to go, you know, on top of trying to get perfect grades. And so I appreciate that you probably have been under a lot of strain for a long time getting to this place. So as great as these choices are, it comes with a lot of anxiety.
Exactly.
So the choices between Princeton, which is a great choice, and I'm sure you have other great schools, and then another specialized program that's a smaller two-year opportunity. Tell me what leans you towards the smaller opportunity.
Well, I mean, like as you've said, yeah, I have all these great choices for these large, top-notch, prestigious, good, great schools by any measure. My only fear is that you know, I'm going to go to them and just sort of get caught up in the drive for success. You know, I worked really hard to get to this point where I have these options, and then I'm going to work really hard in that college so that I can get into a good grad school. I'm going to work really hard in grad school so I can get a good job and then so I can make good money. And, you know, when does it stop? When am I going to just take a step back and live life for the joy of living life? And so this small, I mean, at Deep Springs, it's, like you said, it's a two-year program, and there's only 26 people. And it's free, and you work in alfalfa farm and cattle ranch, which is a sort of, I think, getting to do labor and then being in such a small community, I think it really would provide me with a different perspective and a chance to know myself and to know other people very well and take a step back from the drive towards success and learn maybe a little humility and a little bit of self-knowledge.
It sounds to me like you have thought this through and you're passionate about doing something that takes you out of the mainstream path is pretty evident.
Well, yeah. I feel very good about going to Deep Springs, but then I think, well, there's all those opportunities I would miss out at Princeton and the diversity and the diversity of opportunities. And, you know, it's whatever you do, there's things that are lost.
Always. And I think what I'd love to do, again, is open it up to our radio community. If there's anyone who's had an experience making that choice and down the road now, looking back, are you happy you went with your Princeton choice or your Ivy League choice, or do you wish you had taken a step off and tried something else? What do you think, Kyle? Should we put it out there?
Yeah, let's.
All right. Thank you for your call, and we'll look forward to hearing some of the feedback from people who've already been down that path and choice themselves. Good luck
with
it.
All right, thank you.
I look forward to hearing what you do.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We welcome your phone calls on this or any other topic. Should Kyle get on that train that's fast moving through life? I don't know. Brian, what do you think?
I had the similar choice back 10, 12 years ago, and I had the choice to go work on cruise ships or go straight to college. And it was a gamble, and I wanted to just live life and do something while I thought I had the opportunity. I knew I could always go to college, but I didn't know if I'd always be able to go out on cruise ships and play music for a living out there.
And how was it?
I ended up doing it, and I don't regret it at all. I got to see a lot of the world and have a lot of fun and immerse myself in a very diverse population. Out of about 1,000 crew members, there's usually about 20 Americans. So it was
invaluable, right?
Exactly. I learned a lot about the world and myself doing that.
And it is. We have pushed our kids to feel like they've got to get on that train and not take a step off. But then all of a sudden you're 50 and you're mean. You think, whoa, where did it all go? So I love your perspective on that.
And I came back and ended up going to college afterwards.
Well, there you go.
Got both of them done.
Yeah. And get to be a dad.
Right.
We welcome your thoughts on this at 781-3875. Charlotte, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was wanting to talk to you about the alternatives to using medications like Ritalin and there's other ones too that give some children get side effects from them like headaches, they can't sleep at night, or maybe they're real nervous or something or can't eat or all kinds of side effects. So if a child really does seem to have some ADD symptoms or maybe depression too, and you want to do something to help them, but you're afraid of the medications, what can you do?
Well, it's interesting because there's a few, there's some great books on it that I highly, recommend you check out. The library or Amazon just on some alternatives, because they all seem to have the similar take on it. It's one, to go through diet and make sure the diet is free as possible of sugar, additives, dyes, because they found a real direct correlation between those things and ADD symptoms. To also look at sleep, like we talked about earlier in the program, getting enough sleep. And then the other is, you know, behavior modification. There's different ways of teaching information that kids sometimes respond better to, you know, the way they're receiving the material.
Right.
That makes a difference. And if those things don't seem to, you know, show a decrease in the symptomology, then you might look at a massage. We had a chiropractor call last week who said that she'd had great success helping kids with ADD symptomology through chiropractic care. So I think, you know, from my perspective, once I have gone through the list of everything but meds and none of that works, then I might be willing to try it. But I think there are a lot of alternatives, and I would start with the simple, like sleep and diet and getting plenty of exercise.
Okay, thank you. And another thing, too, that concerns me is a lot of these children, I feel like some of them are getting overlooked. They might be smart kids, but because they're diagnosed with this thing, ADD, they're kind of pushed in the back like they're a little bit retarded or something, and maybe they're not getting enough help from the teachers, and they're really bright kids, which means either the parents are teaching their children or the kids are going to the library and getting books and teaching themselves years later.
I agree, and I think that that's another big concern, is that we need to maybe look at alternative forms of education, a hybrid of homeschooling and using some of the programs that are available. Someone called last week about, was it Outdoors Now? Or
I think that's what it was called.
So we are, you know, a lot of people are having conversations about the size of education and how it really isn't able to serve the needs of all kids well. Because I think not only are we missing the boat on our kids that are different learners, or, you know, that maybe need to be outside more and running more and learning
right.
in different ways, we can't meet their needs. And I also think we fall down sharply on GATE kids, gifted and talented kids, which a lot of
right.
kids with ADD symptomology tend to be very gifted and talented.
They might be gifted and they're not really AD. Like some of the athletes, like that swimmer, what's his name, Mark somebody?
Michael Phelps.
They said that he has ADHD.
Yes.
And, you know, they could be really gifted and they're getting treated like there's something wrong with them. And I really feel like some of these kids really could do much better in life if they were noticed as the special people that they really are.
I agree. And I think the more we talk about it, Charlotte, the more that we start raising the flag, the more it'll become part of the public conversation. We can only hope.
Okay, well, I'm thinking about the children.
Thanks so much. I appreciate your call and enjoy your day.
Thank you.
And you are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. The number to get in on our conversation is 781-3875. Rich, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Elizabeth. Yeah,
hi.
I just heard you talking. That outdoor school is called Outside Now, by the way.
Thank you.
I just happen to know of it. But I was calling to suggest that some people might need some help at home or other companionship type things, especially people who have just moved to the area. One option that's springing up around the country is the concept of time banking, and there's a local chapter called Central Coast Hour Exchange that I'd kind of like to plug a little bit. It's in the beginning stages, but it's been around for almost a year, I believe. It's a type of a thing where services can be exchanged, you know, without money, you know, being exchanged. It's a wonderful concept where you can, you know, spend and collect time on an hourly basis for services, you know, can be exchanged like transportation, help at home, even companionship, arts and crafts, all kinds of different, you know, types of marketplace ideas can be exchanged with this concept. And members just have to kind of go through a screening process, and they can find out about it at, they just Google Central Coast Hour Exchange. It's part of a Time Banking International. But it's a really, really nice concept that's springing up around the country, and we do have a good local chapter here that has, they have potlucks once or twice a month and also some orientation sessions for new members.
I love that. It's something I'm not familiar with. You have educated me today.
Well, good. Yeah, it's something that I think can really be valuable for people that are homebound especially, or And people think that they don't have something to offer, and that's not necessarily true. A lot of people have life experience or skills in arts and crafts or, mm-hmm. Different things that they can actually use to exchange for hours of things that they might really need.
I know. I was often thinking that, especially with young families who would just need a grandma, to help out once or twice a week, maybe the mom can make a meal for grandma and grandma can come over, surrogate grandma can come over and just give mom a respite for an hour or two.
Because
most of us just need to know we're not alone.
Sure. And it's a great concept because the thing that's wonderful about this is it puts a value to, things, simple things that we wouldn't normally value monetarily. Like companionship or simply just hanging out and being a companion for someone actually has a value, and this puts a value to it so that can actually be exchanged.
I love
it. Kind of a wonderful thing.
Central Coast Hour Exchange.
Yeah, Central Coast Hour Exchange. The website is cche.timebanks.org, but probably Googling Central Coast Hour Exchange would be the best way to find it.
I'm going for it. Thank you, Rich. Enjoy your day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, Rick, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind today?
I was calling in response to that student who was trying to decide whether to go to Princeton or take that job on a ranch.
Yeah, Kyle.
Yes. And what I thought of is that he could do both. He could go to Princeton during the school year, and in the summertime, he could do something like work on that ranch or do what that other, what your co-host.
Brian.
Was talking about, like working on a passenger ship. My father worked his way through college where he was studying comparative literature by waiting tables on a transoceanic passenger liner and got to travel all over Europe that way.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, and he saw like young kids learning foreign languages just in the course of the summer. They'd go over just speaking English and come back speaking French or Italian. And so he really he had quite an experience on that, and then he'd go back to school
I think the dilemma for Kyle is that this program, the Deep Springs, is an alternative form of education. So if you can't, it's a year, it's a 2-year program commitment that you do, and then he would probably have to reapply again to some of these bigger schools. And I think that is a dilemma. Having great choices can be as stressful as having no choices at all.
But that's not to say there aren't summer programs that could yield the same sort of benefits.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. But I also wonder if we do push our kids so quickly to go into this experience, like going to Princeton or one of these big schools, when maybe taking a year before you go or two, you mature to a certain point where you're going to get more out of that Ivy League experience than if you rushed in at 18. I don't know.
I totally agree. I didn't go into college right out of high school. Actually, I ended up going into the Navy and because I wanted to travel in the Far East and stuff, and there was no other way I could see of doing that, and I just learned a tremendous amount about the world, about myself. I learned a lot of interesting skills and education when I was in the Navy as well. There were things I didn't like about it, but, boy, it was an eye-opener. And then when I went to college afterward, I was far more mature than my classmates, which is itself somewhat of a problem.
Yeah, it can a blessing or a curse. I guess that's the thing of life, right, that no matter which path we take, we're going to sacrifice something along the way, but we're going to gain quite a bit no matter what, too.
And I think you're a lot more serious after you go out and get some real-life experience. So when you go to school, you're way more into what you're learning. I mean, you see the importance and the application of it.
You'd hope so. I appreciate you taking the time to call and share your thoughts.
Okay.
Have a great day, Rick.
You too.
And you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can reach us at 781-3875 on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Send me an email, elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Call in and chat with Brian if you're concerned about going on the air. You can ask your question directly to him. We're talking about ADHD. We're talking about life choices. What is it we do? What do we have to give up to get great things? And also we're talking about person-to-person help. How do we reach out and build a community in a time that everyone feels so isolated and alone? What can we do to help? Hi, Richard. You're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi, I am one of... a few words towards the Kyle Princeton versus Deep Spring.
Thank you.
I spent 30 years as a faculty member and staff member at the University of California in San Diego, a number of them running the Student Counseling Center. And our experience almost unequivocally with students who had done one of the alternative in-depth programs, Deep Springs, St. John's, et cetera, is A, they had no trouble transferring to the university if they so desire. B, they were very enriched by the small community experience. And C, it gave them a degree of intellectual and emotional maturity that we didn't find in our directly admitted students. So we're all for it.
So you didn't find that there'd be a problem with him reapplying to some of the better schools?
No.
They wouldn't?
No. In fact, it may be reasonable for him to talk to some of the admissions officers and say, look, I have this alternative I may want to do for a year or two. How would you feel about me entering your program then?
Mm-hmm. So how about just from a personal perspective, would you feel if you had stepped off like in your life and done 2 years at a Deep Springs before going on, do you feel that would have been a benefit?
I think it would be great if my parents had had that idea. I think it would be wonderful.
Yeah.
One of the other things you find out in this age of expectations where an undergraduate degree is kind of universal and has been cheapened thereby is that the sense of maturity and purpose that one used to get, let's say 50 years ago, in an entering freshman class, one does not have now.
Mm-hmm.
I really have been favorably impressed by the intensive programs.
Well, I really appreciate you calling in and sharing your wisdom on this subject, because I'm sure Kyle could use all of the mentors around this subject as he can get. Thank you, Richard.
Deep Springs is a fascinatingly good program.
Well, I'm going to have to read more about it because it's the second time it's come up in the last week. You know how you hear something and then all of a sudden it comes up over and over. So I'm going to have to do some research.
It's very much like the St. John's program, smaller, very much classically based on the classical Western canon, and very interactive.
Well, I hope that Kyle's still listening and gets your wisdom, and I hope that you'll call back again with more wisdom as we go on week for week.
Have a great day.
You too, Richard. Thanks for calling. And you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can reach us at 781-3875. That's 805-781-3875. We're kind of in many different places today. We're talking about ADHD as a follow-up to last week and what are some ways that we can help those young families that are struggling to do the right thing, feeling nervous that they might miss the boat if they don't go along with the diagnosis or if they don't medicate their child because they're feeling pressure from the school or feeling pressure from a doctor that this is the only thing they can do. And as a young parent and not having a lot of experience with children, it can feel overwhelming. And you get afraid that if I don't do this now, what happens to my child in the long run? And what if they don't get the educational benefits they need? And so what can we do as a community to help these young families deal with children that learn differently, that might be more hyper and take a lot more energy? And we don't have the time and energy because we're working full-time jobs and trying to take care of other children. So what do these families do? How do we help them to survive and thrive? What can we as a community do to reach out and make a difference? I think that, again, it all comes back to the sense of isolation and alienation a lot of us feel in our community. You know, there's a lot of people with a lot of knowledge and wisdom, like Richard, and calling in with his specialties and other people who've had different experiences. How do we share that knowledge with the younger people coming up to help them to make these difficult life decisions? How do we reach out to the young parents to help them feel supported and say, you know what, you don't have to just go the medical model route, that there are alternatives? And maybe you don't have the money for these more expensive programs, but maybe we can find something through Central Coast Hour Exchange that was called in and suggested, where you can exchange goods and services with other people in the community. Or maybe like Madge, you know, making your own flyer saying, hey, I'm new to the neighborhood and would love to meet some young people who are willing to help out and make a little extra money. We need to start building this community. We need to get out of this big box mentality that we live in, you know, that somehow going to Costco is better than shopping at the mom and pop store. Well, now we're starting to rethink that and we're supporting local smaller businesses. Maybe we need to translate that over to, instead of looking at our lives as these big, empty, big box experiences, how do we connect day to day interpersonally with someone who's right next door? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. The number is 781-3875.
Elizabeth, I have a question. Dave called in that he wanted me to ask you.
Absolutely.
He Dave is a full-grown adult, married, and was diagnosed with ADD as a kid and still has ADHD presently, and had it pretty severe as a kid and still is pretty affected by it. He was looking for some advice. He didn't take meds as a kid, he believes, and he hasn't since throughout his adulthood. He's kind of ruled it out from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And he manages it decently, but like a 6 to 8 work day for most people takes him 12 hours. And he knows he has poor listening skills that are affecting some of his relationships, including that with his wife and his coworkers. And he was looking for a few tips on how to deal with it better from you.
Well, you know, and I think that my first and most simple, and I don't think it's a simple answer because I think there's multiple of things that are impacting Dave. One is, you know, the way we look at work in our culture that, you know, there's some jobs that we might be better suited for than others. There might be a better career for Dave than the job that's taking him 12 hours. You know, there might be something that he's exceptionally gifted at that he might be missing out on. And maybe some career counseling would be a great option. You know, going to one of the junior colleges and talking to a guidance counselor about, here are some of my gifts and here are some of the ways I struggle. How can I utilize my gifts? That's one. Two, going to a great talk therapist. And there are some good talk therapists in the community that I really trust, and that can help you with the relationship skills and to utilize, you know, the things that you do well, and also to help your wife to manage the ways that your communication might be a bit hindered with ADHD symptomology. So those are two simpler things to try right away, because I think, you know, and also getting enough exercise and working the diet and the sleep. And I'm sure he's tried all these things since he's been med free all these years. Mm-hmm. But to take more of a global look at his life and say, you know, what are some of the things I can change about my work experience or my work day to day? And what can I maybe change up about my relationship skills, and how can I get better at them? So a guidance counselor and talk therapist would be my first to start. Mm-hmm. You can always reach me at Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. I'd love to hear from you. And thanks for calling in with your question, Dave. Hi, Ken. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air with The Reluctant Therapist.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. The reason I'm calling, you're mentioning building a sense of community and connection.
Yes.
Something I've been involved for 2 years is something that's locally available to us. It's called the Mankind Project. Mm-hmm. We're a group of men who open up in a safe and nurturing environment, and we share our feelings. And it's been absolutely wonderful. It's been a wonderful experience, changed my life. And information can be found at mankindproject.org, and we're an international nonprofit organization.
And is it men-led groups?
Yes, men-led groups. It's in a kind of a circle format, mm-hmm. and men just kind of open up and connect, and whatever a man needs is all supported. All our feelings are welcome there, and it's just a really wonderful way for men to open up and connect with one another.
I'm so glad you called, Ken, which is why I love doing this program, because I would have never found you otherwise. Uh-huh. And that we have to share these resources, because I am planning to do a whole month of shows on the men's mythopoetic movement and just men's psychology in general, because I think we've lost our way with our young men and mm-hmm. our older men in general. As wonderful as the last 40 years have been for women's advancement, I think that men have really struggled, and mm-hmm. I didn't know about the Mankind Project. I've seen a couple others, but I'd love to talk to you more about it. If you could send me an email or post to my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist,
yes.
We can maybe connect more on this and make these opportunities available to other men in our culture, because I think there's a lot of men that would love to be heard and feel overlooked.
Yes, yes, that's I have felt like that too. So yeah.
And can I ask you one other thing? I would love to somehow connect the Mankind Project with a lot of little boys who could use some male energy in their lives. And maybe are getting, you know, diagnosed with ADD when they really just need some male energy to run and play and jump and skip rocks. And so I'm wondering how we can make that happen.
Yeah, that sounds great. Just get me your email information, you know, the call, whatever. And I'll shoot you an email about it.
Okay, great. I look forward to hearing you either through email or on my Facebook page.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Ken.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, Becky. You're on the air with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just was so appreciative of you mentioning exercise with ADHD kids. As a former teacher, second and third grade kids, we didn't have that much PE for them. I didn't think they got enough exercise in general, and I took it upon myself to have them, before I knew they would sit for a long time, have them run a lap around the field. And it was quite a big field, and they'd come back in, have a drink of water, and it was night and day, especially for the boys. The girls, I had to kick out of the classroom to make them do it, but it was so important. And I did this, it took a few minutes off of my lesson, but the attention was, the quality of attention was so much better. So, and then secondly, as far as connecting to community, I know now I'm staying at home with my daughter, but I've had to really take the initiative through parent participation, and just connecting with people. I'm not going to get phone calls and play dates and, interactions just sitting at home. I had to really put myself out there when normally I might not. Mm-hmm. So, that was a big lesson for me. So.
Yeah, I think it's a steep learning curve, because I think, especially if we go through high school and college, a lot of the opportunities to make friendships kind of come to us organically.
Right.
And then when we get married and have children, it becomes much more difficult because we all get busy in our life, so I think it is a learning curve for a lot of us once we get into our adult lives, that play dates with other adults don't happen that easily.
Right.
And
exactly.
I looked back in my life with my husband and my girls, and my girls are 10 years apart, and the friends that my older daughter made, that kind of became our friend group for a while. And then we went our different directions. And now my younger daughters made friends and their parents became our friend group. And it kind of has to happen, it seems like, through those experiences. And then your friends at work. But it does take more energy. And I think one of the reasons we don't put the energy into it is that there's so many simple ways to distract ourselves,
right,
like television or iPads, or, we can fill our life with a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. 40, 50 years ago, when couples went bowling, once or twice a week, or had bridge groups, or they didn't have access to other forms of entertainment. So it kind of forced them out of the house at night to do these things. And I think now we have to make a much more conscientious effort to engage ourselves. So there's a little bit of the personal responsibility, as well as finding programs like, moms helping moms groups or neighborhood support groups. What's been the best avenue you've found for making connection?
Really through parent participation, that was huge for me. I stay at home so I can, attend some of the classes. Mm-hmm. That was huge, meeting other moms who were also in the same situation. And then friends of their friends and connecting with them. And then I live in a smaller town, and people just around my street, I get out with my daughter, we go on walks, and so we just run into people and chit chat, but it takes physically getting out of the house.
Yeah, it takes an effort, and some days I'm sure you'd much rather just stay in your jammies and hang out.
Absolutely.
Well, Becky, I appreciate both the comments about the exercise and the success you had with your students. And I hope that resonates with a lot of people, because even for parents, you know, after you pick the kids up from school or maybe at night before, you know, after dinner and before bath time, do a lap around the neighborhood or a couple laps around the backyard, help them to settle down and get ready for bed. I think that kind of the idea of needing to get all of our woolies out, so to say, before we can settle down is true in all aspects of our children's lives.
Yeah, well, thanks so much. I appreciate the program.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate calling in. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
And you are listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. The number to call in is 781-3875. We just have a couple minutes left. So if you have a comment or question, we'd love to hear from you. Today we've been talking about a lot of things, Brian. We've been all over.
We sure have.
I learned about the Central Coast Hour Exchange. So this, I can't wait to check into, a time bank where you can donate services and then exchange for other services from people who have gifts in other areas. Love that idea about building community. The MannKindProject.org sounds really interesting for helping men connect and to share their feelings and experiences. Outside Now is an alternative program for kids who might need a more experiential type of learning situation to thrive in our community, which I think is really important. The thing we haven't gotten to cover enough, and I hope it comes up again next week and week after that, is what about the families that are just doing okay? How are we going to get to them? How do we help a stay-at-home mom with multiple kids and one of her kids needs a lot more attention and energy? How do we support that family? What can we do to make their journey a little better? You know, and a lot of people might think, well, why should I care? I raised my kids and I'm done. And, you know, why do I need to help out with other families? I think the important thing to remember is that the children that are coming up right now are going to be our future firemen and doctors and teachers and policemen and part of our community. And the parenting and education they receive is going to really determine the quality of all of our lives as a community. So we should each be vested daily in how well young families are doing with their children and supporting as we can, making a meal or offering to take someone to the park or offering parents a night out. Because we are isolated and we are busy, and a lot of families don't live near extended families or grandparents that can help out. So finding those surrogate grandparents could be really important. And, you know, at one time in our history, we really relied on our church communities to help us feel connected and part of our communities. Now, not as many people, you know, participate in the church organizations, so we need more community groups. But I think the key is having to get out of our comfort zone and maybe put down the technology, put away the distractions and the noise that we hear, and the noise that we hear in our head. That keeps us from reaching out and being with other people. I think that that, you know, really prevents us from making those interpersonal connections that are so necessary for feeling connected and feeling whole. I think that's the conversation that we need to keep having, you know, is how do we maybe join a bowling league or make some time to get out and interact with other people in our neighborhood. It's a little scary to socially exchange niceties with someone at the grocery store, but you never know where that spark is going to occur. So maybe that's your homework for this week, is to find something that you might be interested in. Maybe it's a lecture somewhere. Maybe it's a program that's happening in the park. Maybe there is a parent participation program. You know, maybe there's another place you can step your foot out and just try it. That's your homework from the therapist for this week, is to take yourself out of your comfort zone just a little and see how that helps. Or maybe reach out to someone that you think might be struggling a little bit and offer to help. Please connect with us next week at the same time on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or send me an email at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I appreciate all of your phone calls, all of your community. I look forward to hearing from you next week. Thank you for listening and supporting Public Radio KCBX. Bye, Brian.
Bye, Elizabeth.